One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
We're still fighting for this title. And he's got to go to Middleburg and get something. And I'll tell you, honestly, I will love it if we beat them. Love it.
Yes, everybody, what is happening? It's another edition of The Warm Down, and this week, I'm going to reel it back a little bit from the excitement. This week is the 60th anniversary of the Munich air disaster. You can go and check out my previous videos on that. You can also check out what's going to be getting released early tomorrow morning, so make sure you turn the notifications on, because I've got a very special documentary that I've done with my granddad with the help of Manchester United for a change, so I'm actually delighted with that. But today is all about one player in particular. I am delighted to be joined by James Layton, who is the author of one of my favourite books. You definitely heard me talking about this. Just get it in so the light's not on it. Duncan Edwards, The Greatest. Now, you didn't call him Duncan Edwards. He was above average, did you? You called it The Greatest.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. That was the whole basis for the book, I suppose. Asking that question, is he the greatest? And then coming up with that conclusion.
So, right, because you're not a United fan, we'll just introduce James to everybody. James is an author, he's from Cardiff, and you are a Cardiff City fan?
I am, yes, unfortunately.
About a Manchester United legend. So, tell us how that came about, please.
Well, like I said, I've grown up being a Cardiff City fan since I was young, and followed the highs and more often the lows of supporting a team in the lower divisions. So while I was, idolised Cardiff City and was more than happy. Growing up as a child, my dad and a few of us from Cardiff would regularly go off on little pilgrimages, watch top flight football and the superstars of the day. From your Gazzers, your Ginolas, your Cantonars, your Henrys, and so on and so on. And whenever we'd be in the car on these journeys, going to see a footballer we were all really looking forward to seeing, you'd compare them to players from yesteryear, and the conversation would always turn to, well, who was the greatest footballer of all time? It was just incredible how often we had these conversations, and more often than not, most of us would change our opinions and be swayed by other people's opinions. But my godfather, who throughout the 1950s watched a lot of United games, and he's watched a hell of a lot of football, not just in the UK but all over, and he never ever changed his opinion. He would always say It was Duncan Edwards. Duncan Edwards was the... And my godfather would say Duncan Edwards. I would always say, oh, come on now. You're just saying that because he died such a tragic death. I mean, there's no way by the age of 21 you could say that he was the greatest footballer of all time. You could say he had the potential to be the greatest, but you can't say that. Not when we're comparing him to the likes of Pelé and Best and people like that. And my godfather would say, nope. He was still the best. Even when he died at 21, even by then, he was still the best. I'd seen enough. So it's like, wow, that is my godfather's not someone to bullshit either or to come to hype. As the years went by and I started a writing career, that question was always reverberating round and round in my head. Was Duncan Edwards as good as they said he was? And so you'd go on online and you try and get on YouTube and see some clips or old Man United videos, and there'd be little bits here and there, but it was really hard to judge. And I thought, well, what I'd love to do is dig into the archives and see what people were actually saying about him when he was actually playing, not after the tragedy of Munich, but when he was actually playing, what were people saying? And I thought I would selfishly love to research that subject myself, time, team and individual to really dig into. And I thought, well, There's been books on United and the Babes, and there's a great book by Ian McCartney and Roy Kavanagh in the 80s about Duncan. But it'd been such a long time since a major Duncan book had come out. I did think there would be real interest in asking the question if he was as great as we all say he was?
So you asked that question, you posed that question. I mean, for those of us that have read the book, we already know the answer. And the clue is in the title. Like I said, you didn't call it, "This Lad Was Above Average." What do you think makes him so great? Because one of the things that stands out to me is the season before he wins a Ballon d'Or nomination, which I think for a defender is massive, and for a defender from England to be getting that recognition is massive, to be coming as high as he did in the Ballon d'Or rankings. He was also playing for the Army on a regular basis, which that's the thing, when he played like around 100 matches, I think, didn't he, in the 56 season. That blows my mind when he's got the travel, which wouldn't have been the first class 2 hours back and forth to London that it was. Now it would have been like hours and hours and hours, hardly comfortable. The nutrition wouldn't have been great. The pitches would have been heavy. How the hell did he cope with being in the Army, playing for the Army, and then playing for Manchester United and putting in 10 out of 10 performances of a weekend?
It's just, I mean, when you put it in that context, it's absolutely incredible that you think this boy, and he was a boy, was in the week doing full-time army work, and not only, you know, wasn't training at Manchester United, he was in the army at Shrewsbury, and he had to ask for leave from the army to play for Manchester United. In fact, you know, there were some times where army games clashed with Manchester United games and they wouldn't release him. So it's incredible. And on top of that, then, you know, asking for leave, as you said, to play for Manchester United and all the travel that entails, you know, he wasn't just then playing for the army team itself. He was also playing for his barracks team. So he's racking up over 100 matches in a season. As you said, with terrible pitches, heavy balls, heavy boots. And he was someone who just didn't seem to get into it. He just loved it. I mean, there's this great story where, I might have even been this season, he was asked trophies to a five-a-side tournament. And Duncan of that and said, of course he would. But then when he realised that Manchester United had a junior tournament, he asked Sir Matt, you know, well, I want to play as well. I just don't want to present the trophies. I want to play. And this was an England international, Manchester United superstar, still wanting to play five-a-side football in amongst doing his national service. So he just had this incredible hunger for the game. He was obsessed. I mean, if we go back to the initial question, about how great he was and why. I mean, that's one of the facets of it, was this incredible hunger to improve, to keep fit, to keep playing, to analyse the game. But he was also just a natural, straight from birth. His mother, Annie, recalls, literally, he didn't have to be taught how to kick a football. He just had this natural ability to strike a ball cleanly, which is almost like a God-given gift. And it wasn't then this natural talent he had. He writes in his book, Tackle Soccer, this way, that he would go out night after night after night and would practice kicking the ball against the wall with both feet. And sometimes in junior games, he would limit himself to playing with his weaker foot until, in the end, you couldn't differentiate which foot was stronger than the other. So
that's some incredible foresight for a young man of his... Well, he was 21 when he died. For someone to have the foresight to think, I'm going to condition myself and limit myself in some games to make it harder for myself, and still probably being by far and away the best player on the pitch, and improving himself as he's doing this.
Yeah, and a lot of the time, you know, he's playing against boys twice his age. He's watching, you know, him as like a 7-year-old playing with a group of 15-year-old boys and slamming people everywhere. I mean, Duncan was also, you know, naturally strong. He had a great physique. But even though he was, you know, 6 foot plus and 12 stone, he was still very, very quick. And in his school days, actually, he was a top Morris dancer. And his teacher remembers him being, you know, very dainty on his feet, very graceful, despite being such a big boy. So he had these natural God, this hunger, pick things up quickly. I mean, many a time his coaches said they would let him take the coaching session, they teach him once, he'd pick something up, and he'd just go away and take the session himself. And then he had this incredible character about him as well, where he was very quiet and shy and softly spoken off the pitch. But on the pitch, he just had this will to win, this leadership. People would look up to him on the ball. he could play. I think the main thing about Duncan, which everyone talks about, and it's true, is the variety of positions he could play in. For Manchester United, I think I'm right in saying he played in every single position, even in goal. In the Charity Shield, Roy Woods got injured, he had to go off, and Duncan went in goals for 10 minutes and kept a clean sheet. And you read, certainly in the youth team games, when Duncan came into the club and they won 3 youth cups, you read the reports, and it's just unbelievable the amount of playing at the back, and they need a goal, and they'd send him up front, and I think I'm right in saying it was Chelsea in a semi-final of the Youth Cup, and Jimmy Murphy was conscious before the game that the players were just looking to Duncan a bit too much. They weren't taking responsibility. So before the game, Jimmy said to the team, listen, guys, you're all... Bobby Charlton was in a changing room. Why don't you take responsibility yourselves? Pass the Duncan. But, you know, you're all good players here. You don't need to look to him all the time. So anyway, United were apparently 1-0 down at half-time, and Murphy went crazy and said, forget what I said, just pass the ball to Duncan at every single opportunity. And Duncan went out there, and I think he scored 2 goals, and United won the game. That pattern repeated itself into the first team, into his time with the England national team. He could go anywhere, centre back, on the wing, centre midfield, up front, wherever he was needed. And he was world class. He was
The connection keeps dropping out, so apologies everybody, but I'm not going to interrupt James as he's talking it, because this is some fantastic insight. You actually open the book talking about the different positions that Duncan might have played, almost projecting what might have happened if Munich hadn't have occurred, but what England would have done in Chile, what England might have done in 66, and then even I think in Mexico as well, talking about, and I think you've got him painted in a different position in each of those World Cups, and obviously talking up England's chances. Would we have seen Bobby Moore? Would we have seen him captain in England? What do you think was so special about him that made him play in all these positions? And where do you think his best position was? Because it seems like left half was where he was most favoured.
I think when he was playing for United, he predominantly played left half.
Which, can you explain to the listeners and viewers where that actually be? Because that would be like a left-sided holding the midfielder sort of role, like a number 6-ish, wouldn't it?
See, the formations have changed now, so it's hard to almost visualise now, but obviously it's on the left side, and apparently it involved a tremendous... It's almost like a wing-back, I suppose, because when you read about that position, it involved a tremendous amount of stamina just getting up and down those muddy pitches. So that was predominantly his position in the United team. But as you said, he played in every position anyway. And as his career progressed, it's interesting when you speak to people or you read interviews, what people project where he might have ended up. A lot of people have suggested he would have been a tremendous John Charles leading the line. He could have been a great centre forward. But most people seem to say, by World Cup, he would have grown into this dominant ball-playing centre-back. And then there's a fascinating question which I raise in the book. The 1966 World Cup, Duncan would have only been 29 years old. So it's likely he would have played probably at centre-back alongside Bobby Moore, which would have meant Jack Charlton would have missed out. Of course, there's also the question, if Mark Jones had lived, he would have been, you know, a similar age to Duncan, and there's every likelihood Mark Jones and Duncan would have played centre-back for the England 1966 World Cup team, and we wouldn't have heard of Jack Charlton or Bobby Moore. Just for instance, if it was Duncan and Bobby Moore playing there, when Jimmy Greaves got injured in the tournament, you know, there's the argument there he might have been the one to move up Jeff Hurst's place, and then Jack Charlton would have come in the team. So we would never heard of Jeff Hurst and his hat-trick then. I mean, that's the level of player we're talking about. And then, of course, you know, we're just talking about 1966. England, one of the favourites for the 1958 tournament. Just before that tournament, they'd gone to Berlin and they'd beaten West Germany, the reigning world champions in Berlin. England beat 3-1. And Duncan apparently was not only what is regarded as one of the greatest goals ever seen on German soil. And thankfully, you can watch it on YouTube. You could just pick it out in the grainy footage. He picks up the ball in midfield. And
he weaves past a few of them.
Yeah, and then he just slams this ball in the top corner. And they called him Boom Boom. He'd been a hero there. He played there for England B team and for United in pre-season, and he'd always delivered when he was in Germany. So when he would turn up at the airport, he'd be mobbed, which he was very... Just for England, for instance, you know, they beat the world champions West Germany in Berlin, and they were the 1954 champions. In the same month, England then beat Brazil at Wembley 4-2, and Duncan again was man of the match. And Brazil, of course, would go on and win the 58 World Cup. So England were favourites just because of Duncan. There was, of course, Tommy Taylor. There was Roger Byrne. Bobby Charlton was part of the squad. So Munich ripped the heart out of the 1958 England World Cup squad just on the eve of the tournament, really. So England could have quite conceivably won in 58. In 62 in Chile, not only would you have had, obviously, Duncan, Roger Byrne, Tommy Taylor, Bobby Charlton would have come into his own as a world-class footballer by then, Mark Jones, Eddie Coleman, David Pegg. I mean, the Babes would have been the backbone of that England team in 62, 66.
Might have even had another one that had come through by then.
But I'm sure there would have been, yeah. And even into 1970, a lot of the Babes would have still been playing. And for England, you mean they would have been serious contenders in all of those World Cups. But for Manchester United, you think of the Babes, they've reached two European Cup semi-finals back-to-back. You know, they would have dominated Europe, there's no doubt. That it would have been them and Real Madrid. They would have certainly won more than the one European Cup in 68. And you think that backbone of the Babes team, and you suddenly add in George Best and Dennis Law and Nobby Stiles and the other great players of the 60s, it would have taken your breath away. United would have just dominated Europe and England.
My granddad's adamant you wouldn't even have heard of Pelé if the 58 England side was
together. In 58, that was Pelé's tournament, wasn't it? Everyone regards that as Pelé's tournament, but really it would have been, I mean, Pelé was a 17-year-old then, Duncan would have been 21, and you know, no doubt coming off, United quite conceivably could have won the double that year, but for Munich.
Treble. Lost the
obviously, they were in the semi-finals, they could have won the treble back in 58, sorry. So it could have been the Duncan Edwards year. And tragically, you know, that summer as well, he was due to marry his fiancée, Molly Leach, and they were buying a house together. So it's just the tragedy that the summer of 1958 was set up to crown Duncan personally and professionally, 21 years of age, the greatest footballer of his generation, perhaps the greatest footballer we'd ever seen. And we were robbed.
What was the source material saying when you went and looked at it? What's the journalist of the time? Was there opinion pieces then, or was it more match report type stuff?
It was lots of match reports. In fact, I've made some notes this afternoon from the book because I thought it'd be good to look at the match reports. I should actually say, you know, I wrote this book now 6-7 years ago, and I haven't read it since. And purely, yeah, I do that with most of my work back for two reasons. One, you've read it so often by the time it's actually published, you've probably read it, you know, 150 to 200 times, so you think, right, I've had enough of that. Secondly, of course, when you reread your work, you always hate it, and it makes you cringe rereading it back. But the only reason I haven't reread it, this is just so upsetting. Just the story. I was reading it this afternoon, the Munich chapters in particular. It was the hardest book I've ever written and probably will ever write, because you become so connected to everyone involved. Little Eddie Coleman seems such a fascinating character. Tommy Taylor on the town with him. When you're writing the chapter where you're killing them off, you almost feel guilty writing the chapter. You don't want to finish the book. It was horrendous to write, really. It really was. And even now, just reading it back, it brought it back. So it was hard to write. It's just a tragedy, which is unparalleled. Right, I made notes this afternoon just to flag up some of the match reports that were being said. Some of the highlights. Now here, this is a great one. This is just prior to his debut against Cardiff City in 2 seconds. Let me just flick through this. So Duncan was just about to make his debut for Manchester United.
He was 16 when he made his debut. Angel Gomez has just become the fourth youngest player to play for us this century, and he's slotted in right behind where Duncan was. So he's just 16.
Yeah, just 16. And he'd only joined the club about 8 months earlier, and he'd risen all the way to get to this point. So his rise was Babe standards. And this is just before he made his debut. Follows said this about Duncan Edwards before he'd even kicked a ball in the first team. Like the father of the first atom bomb, Manchester United are waiting for something tremendous to happen. This tremendous football force they've discovered is Duncan Edwards, who's exactly 16 and a half this morning. Though nobody can tell what will happen when Edwards explodes into first division football, it will be spectacular. Take these two testimonials from chief coaches of other clubs after a recent Youth Cup game. Don't say I told you so, but this thing on two legs. Don't say I said so, but this boy Edwards has got the lot. What can you do? Well, the important thing is that this boy Edwards is a man of 12 stone and 5 foot 10 inches in height. That gives him his first great asset of power. When he heads the ball, it's not a flabby flirtation with fortune. It's bold and decisive. When he tackles, it is with a man-trap bite. And when he shoots with either foot, not even Jack Rowley, the pride of Old Trafford, is shooting harder. Add to this body swerve and bravery and the sixth sense in tight corner that distinguishes the truly great player, and you have a boy who has the lot. If you think this is a lot to write about a lad of 16, I can only say you obviously Edwards.
I don't imagine that the tabloids of the time was prone to hyperbole.
No, they weren't. They really weren't. So that just makes it even more astounding to pile on that praise on a 16-year-old who'd yet to play first division football. Of course, he'd been the star of the show in the Manchester United youth team that season. But still, we've all seen a lot of great players at youth level who haven't gone on to carry that standard on into professional football.
Absolutely.
But that type of report pretty much follows Duncan throughout his entire time at Manchester United and for England.
What was he when he made his England debut? He was 18, wasn't it? His England debut, or 19? Was he 19 or 18 with his England debut?
He was 18. National until Michael Owen in 1998. I mean, and he came in the England team and they beat Scotland 7-2, and he made that position his own. As I said, he was the star of the show against West Germany and against the likes of Brazil. And he was 18 years old, just strolled into that England team. And again, this was a time, remember, when the first division was predominantly made up of English footballers. It's not like today, where if you're English, you're probably just going to get in the squad on default. There was a lot of competition then, and generally players just did not get into an England team before they were 21 at the very least. So for him to have made his debut at 18 and then kept his position was astounding at the time.
What's the general response and the general feeling from some of the journalists that are writing about him? Are they aware this is something special as he's turning from 17, 18, 19? Are they talking about him like this is one of the best ever? Where's the trajectory gone from him being this exciting talent at 16?
I mean, look, I'll just dig out one. I've just got a big star and a highlighter on this England B team game against West Germany. With the England A team who beat West Germany as well. As I said, Duncan was adored in Germany. And he went there with the England B team. So let me just find this report. Right, 2 seconds. So this was Desmond Hackett of the after they England B beat West Germany. Already man-sized and carrying a football brain to match, this Edwards is going to become the he's even got down to serious shaving. He was of the Germans.
Oh, start that again, mate.
In Germany, he's tackling. Sorry, so this is Desmond Hackett of the Daily Express reporting on Duncan's performance for the England B team against Germany. Already man-sized and carrying a football brain to match, this Edwards is going to become the terror of the he was certainly the despair of the Germans. In Germany, his tackling put the Continentals completely off their game. Ball, he hit it really hard and accurately to his colleagues. And 2 seconds, let me just find another one. I mean, what I should emphasise as well, during this period when he's playing for Manchester United, the United youth team, full of the babes, went to Zurich to play in a youth tournament against the best. And the babes not only won the tournament, they caused such a sensation out there. This was just before the 54 World Cup, and all the national teams were preparing for the World Cup. The Brazilian national team went to watch the Busby Babes youth team play. They had heard so much about them, and they fell in love with them. The Brazilian team actually wanted to take Duncan and Billy Whelan home with them. They thought that much of them. And Duncan actually played the entire tournament at centre-back. And in the final, Matt Busby decided to play him up front. And he scored a hat-trick in the final. I mean, it's just like Roy of the Rovers.
I think that's the issue with the Duncan Edwards mythology, is because it doesn't translate to what we see on the pitch now, where someone can be a Rio Ferdinand at the back and Ronaldo at the front. It doesn't make any sense to us watching this now. The only player that I could think maybe close to him is maybe like someone of Rooney's sort of temperament, where you think that you could probably put them anywhere and they'd want to do it. But it sounds like Duncan had a better touch than Rooney. And
I mean, this is a great this Manchester even talking about Duncan and all the positions. I've said it before and I repeat it, that Duncan Edwards is certain to be England's future captain. Chief problem is where to play him. He is a brilliant wing halfback, but can adapt himself to centre half, and now both United and England realise his possibilities in attack. Should be played. United did so well at Huddersfield last weekend, and that is why England B won so handsomely at Clyde. One international player told me that Edwards might get too heavy. He may be correct in his belief, but I recall that Frank Barson, a former United centre half, was stones too heavy when he returned at the start of the season, but he always succeeded and have affected his play. We cannot escape from the fact that Duncan Edwards is the greatest young player of his age. I know we had our Bastions, Carters and Dohertys and others, but I rank Edwards as the best young player I've ever seen.
It seems to be a hell of a lot of...
Yeah, I think that says it all.
Yeah. I think the quote that always stood out to me is Bobby Charlton himself. He says, "There's only one player made me feel inferior." And when you think of Bobby Charlton's career and you think back to what he achieved and what he won, I mean, his is a Roy of the Rovers career. Munich survivor, Busby Babe, wins the FA Cup, the league titles with Manchester United, the World Cup with England, the European Cup 10 years after Munich as captain for Manchester United. He finishes his England career as leading scorer, his United career as leading scorer and record appearances. And he goes, "Yeah, but I was never as good as Duncan Edwards was." And he goes, Pelé, Bobby Moore, George Best, Dennis Law and Duncan Edwards... is head and shoulders above all of them.
Charlton really shouldn't feel inferior to anyone. His career is beyond Hollywood. It is incredible when you think of what he achieved, as he said, and going from Munich, surviving Munich to winning the European Cup is a Hollywood script right there.
Oh,
and
my
then.
God. You'd throw it out. If Hollywood give you that script, you'd go, "Shut up, mate. I'm not. No one's buying that. That didn't happen." Not in the manner it happens.
Sometimes... It amazes me, actually. There's never been a film made about... If it was in America, there would have been about 10 films made of Bobby Charlton surviving Munich to go on and win the European Cup.
Anna Ballon d'Or.
Incredible, but... Sorry?
Anna Ballon d'Or. 66 Ballon d'Or.
Oh, sorry, of course, yes, yes. Sorry, you broke up then. But as you said, yeah, Bobby, I should say Sir Bobby Charlton, played with and against the greatest footballers, not only of his age, but players like, you know, the Bests and the Pelés that we consider of all time. And for him to say, but, you know, Duncan was another level, is incredible. And of course, Bobby was Duncan's great, great friend. He writes warmly about how when he turned up to digs at Manchester United, Duncan would look after him. Duncan was the first person to welcome him in. And actually, when Bobby Charlton then started his national service, he was in the same barracks as Duncan and instantly made him at home. He carried his beds into the barracks for him. So Bobby Charlton worshipped Duncan as a friend. So you could think, wow, maybe it is tainted by sentiment, Duncan. But as I've read, you know, it wasn't just Bobby Charlton who was saying this at the time. The likes of Stanley Matthews. I mean, I've got a quote from Stanley Matthews here about Duncan. So just to prove it, United players bigging him up. They're the greatest footballer of his age prior to Duncan coming in. This is what he had said about Duncan Edwards. Said you had to be strong with big thick thighs. Edwards' build was no surprise, but he was so quick, and that was what made the difference. A player that size who was quick like that.
And Stanley Matthews, what you would argue, I'm going to say no player, but I'm going to also say he probably resented that modern style of footballer coming through. So for him to praise him, I'm just trying to put my head, and I'm just thinking, I can imagine someone that played to the age he played, I imagine he probably had a lot of shit to talk about younger players coming through.
Well, it's amazing because you mentioned where England beat Brazil played. Stanley Matthews played and he's 42 years old. So it's incredible to think of the age difference. And of course, what was amazing about not just Duncan was suddenly flooded the Manchester United team and started to infiltrate the England team. There was...
We just lost you for a...
Well,
we lost you for quite a bit then.
Sorry?
We lost you for quite a bit then, mate. Sorry.
Oh, sorry. I'll repeat myself. What was amazing about this Babes team was as they started to flood the Manchester United, the England team, was there was this explosion of rock and roll and youth culture in the UK. So the likes of Stanley Matthews and the Not Locked Now... you know, it would almost dress in suits and trilby hats, the likes of women turning up and hair, and suddenly the vernacular of the age changed. And the Babes rock and roll of the day. The football team, I think I'm right in saying that, suddenly had girls turn up screaming. Before George Best, there's lots of reports of girls turn up screaming at the Babes because they looked cool. They didn't look like your Stanley Matthews or people's fathers. They all looked cool. They looked like they could have been rock and roll stars.
I remember my granddad saying that. They used to wear white macks with the collars turned up and they'd used to wear a trilby at a bit of an angle because there was a bit off it a little bit. And
yeah.
But I can get it. I can get it. I can't picture it, but I can get it. There was another one I was going to ask you. If Duncan was a modern-day player, who do you think we could compare him to?
I think he's almost incomparable to a modern-day player. I think you'd have to take elements of different players. I think when I wrote the book, I said at the time, you know, he almost seemed spirit of like a John Terry. And then he'd have the midfield drive and shooting ability and passing ability of like a Steven Gerrard or Bobby Robson.
You've got the wrong names here for this.
I know, yeah. That's why I threw in Bobby Robson. Brian Robson, I should say, yeah. We'll say Brian Robson instead of Gerrard. And then almost, you know, leading like a Wayne Rooney in his prime. He just seemed... all of that in one footballer. So you can imagine in any given game, if you want Wayne Rooney in his prime up front, you move your John Terry from the back and put him up front. He was world class in every position, so they say, which You know, today we're very fortunate to live in the age of Ronaldo and Messi, who in their specialised positions are probably the greatest of all time. They're just incredible. But can you imagine Ronaldo or Messi playing in or centre midfield and being world class? They'd probably be very good, but that Duncan proved he could do it. And there's not many players throughout the history of the game who can do that.
Do you know what, James? This has been fantastic. I wish I could go on longer, but I think the connection's killing us a little bit. So what I'll say is, instead of revealing all the secrets, go buy the book. I'll put the link in the description below. James, where can people find you?
Hello?
That's why we need to do that. Right, James, where can people find you?
You can get me on Twitter, 1927.
Say that again, we lost
you. That's generally to be found.
Ironically.
you can find me on Twitter. That's where you'll generally find me, James. And nowadays, you could probably get the book on Amazon rather than in bookstores because it's been out quite a while. So, yeah, you can track it down on Amazon.
I'll bang a link to his Twitter in there because I don't think we got a single one of those where he managed to say what it was. So his link for his Twitter is in the description. Go and tell him you've listened to the podcast and tell him what you think of the book if you've bought it as well. So thanks to you guys for watching. Thank you to James for joining me. This was great. And thank you for writing such an absolutely fantastic book.
Thank you, Stephen.
There is not enough good original content like this that you can get to really find out for yourself about what Duncan was like. James has done all the legwork. Spend like 10, 12 quid and go and get yourself a copy of this and see what he's been saying as well. So, James, thank you. Thanks to you guys for watching.
Thank you very much for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Go check out some of the other Munich stuff that we've done with my granddad and that, and bang the notifications on, as I said, because tomorrow there's a really good video coming out which you guys don't want to miss. Thanks for watching. We'll see you in a bit.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at kosai.org.